tough night out there. How are you feeling after a really physical game like that and everything you guys have been going through? Short week.
I feel good. I mean, it's football at the end of the day. Physicality is required in this game, so I feel good. It's just a tough loss.
Live in Silver Spring, the show's on the road in Maryland. The field trip series continuing on a Friday. It's Grant and Danny. We are driven to you each and every day thanks to our good friends, our exclusive sponsors, Kondori and Murad. They literally drove us to Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I guess not literally.
I mean,
figuratively.
Like, literally. Yeah. I mean, we didn't ride in their car.
Right.
Right.
They literally brought us with them to Lincoln Financial Field.
They were literally responsible for us being there.
And they even made sure that our last will and testament was squared away.
There you go.
Before we went to go mingle with Eagles fans. Kondori and Murad will take care of you as well. They'll get you that last will and testament, set up a trust for you and your family, schedule a free consultation. They're estate planning attorneys today, kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you to get a discount. That's kmlawyers.com. By the way, I do want to just nip something in the bud if we could. Darius went as far as to say, Danny, and I'll let him say it here on the show, but he went as far as to say something that I think is going to bother you a little bit, and it'll bother our listening audience.
Oh.
So before we talk about some overreactions on this Friday within the fan base.
Okay.
Speaking of overreactions, Darius, what was the thing that you said was your big takeaway from the trip?
After our experience in Philadelphia, in Lincoln Financial Field, and riding the train home, I have to say, I think Philly fans get a bad rep.
Okay.
I think that it's not that bad.
All right.
I don't think
tough.
That they're as angry and disgruntled as people make them seem to be.
Now, I got a few thoughts. Again, that was Darius who said that, not me.
The opinion I said expressed it. By Darius Dammons.
I said it.
Like those of 106.7, the fan or Grant and Danny.
It was actually kind of funny. So Danny and I are like, you know, they weren't that bad. And I was like, yeah, you know, they were had a good moment or two. And Danny's like, they're pleasant at times. And Darius is like, yeah, they're totally the best fans ever, and I love them. And we're like, whoa, bro. What the hell are you talking about? That was kind of the scene that played out. But you're saying bad rap. That's tough for me. So, number one, where did we sit? We sat in the club level at the 50-yard line. It's not like that's the crew that's normally jacking people up in the bathroom, okay? The guy next to me makes $600,000 a year. He's a banker in Philadelphia named, what's the guy's name that went to your college? Give me one.
High school.
Yeah, St. Albans.
We could talk Harlow, Chittenden,
Voorhees. Some guy named Harlow is sitting next to me.
My guy.
Who makes 600 G's. You think Harlow's waiting until I go into the bathroom so he can go grab me when I'm at the urinal and start hitting me in the ribs?
He's like, hey, hon, do you want to order ahead from the Taquerian place, or do you want me to get you some
Why is he
Nicolas
Cage
wraps?
All of a sudden?
He's not Nicolas Cage.
Give me a Nicolas Cage.
So do you want to even order from the Taquerian? Or do you want something else? I'm so thirsty, I should find a 7-Eleven.
That's how I call back to before.
Where were we? Oh, yeah.
Looking for the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah. But back to speaking of the Declaration of Independence, back to Philadelphia. It's a bunch of rich folks or people that dropped lots of money on the tickets around us.
Sure.
If we were sitting in section 415, we would have been around different clientele.
I'm willing to accept that.
Also,
fact. Yeah.
What was Danny wearing?
Very indescriptive, you know, gear.
Yes. What was I wearing?
Very indescriptive gear.
You looked like you were rooting for Devontae Smith. You had a black hoodie on with a green number 6. People look at you, and they're like, oh, he's one of us. Yet, weird, no one was mean to you. You look like an Eagles fan. You couldn't have dressed more like... You wouldn't have looked more like an Eagles fan if you wore a Jalen Hurts jersey.
I got to say, first of all, Ryan, I'm going to get you back when I get back to studio for dropping those on
me. Whoa.
For dropping the
dagger
on me.
I'm going to get you back.
I'll get you back on that one.
That's a threat on air.
Yes, I did dress without gear, without Redskins gear, without Commanders gear. As most of us did.
And that
probably helped our case. I will admit that. Yes.
You didn't wear burgundy and gold.
Did not wear burgundy and
gold. Which we all agreed we were not going to do.
This is correct.
Right?
Yes.
You went one step further. You wore black and green.
Well, it's my only non-DC Sports hoodie that I have. All my hoodies are DC Sports or 106.7 The Fan. This is the only one that I had that's not
No
DC
judgment
Sports.
Here.
Right.
I'm just saying, you looked like an Eagles fan. Correct? Yes or no? Did a lady confuse you for being an Eagles fan last night?
She did. She did. I was standing up sulking after we had gave up the back-to-back Saquon Barkley touchdowns. And she walked over, a little old lady that came over, and after she was giving first down signals multiple times, because that's what they do, she came over and she said, "I just realized that you're a Commanders fan. It's going to be okay."
She was a Southern lady.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Something
or
like
is that your Philly accent?
I don't do a good Philly accent.
Well, you do it because you say water.
Well, aside from that. So, yeah, she came over and consulted me. I thought it was very nice. And
but
she painted the picture
nice.
For me. Yeah. She painted the picture of Philly fans for me.
I don't necessarily have a good analogy, but it, Danny, when you go to a game in the most insulated way that you possibly could, none of us dressed up wearing burgundy and gold, sitting among the best that Philadelphia has to offer. I mean, the absolute classiest in the fan base. Your takeaway is, you know, they're actually pretty good.
So here's the analogy I would offer you. My brother and sister-in-law do all sorts of really fun, cool things. They always have, like, good ideas and, like, neat stuff. One of the things they like to do is go camping.
Yeah.
Now, when they go camping, they find this little, like, cool place to do it. And there's, like, this small cottage where you're kind of roughing it. But you're not just sleeping on the ground underneath the stars. You follow me?
Oh, this is good.
So instead of going, when they go, we love camping because they do this really cool, fun thing that they found.
It's not camping, man.
You didn't just grab a rucksack and a bow knife and live off the land and like fight off grizzly bears for territory.
Yeah, yeah.
See what I'm saying? You went camping in the nice little lodge, right?
You were
technically there. You were among them, but were you? Yeah. It's not an outhouse. It's working plumbing and a faucet.
I think I got one, too.
Yeah.
Famous comedian guy.
Danny Rubier.
No. Well, you.
Successful?
Yeah.
Okay.
Famous comedian guy takes his private jet from one city to the next, right? He flies in his PJ. He gets on the jet. They ask him, "What would you like for dinner, sir?" They take his order down. They come back. He gets a chicken breast with a little mashed potato, maybe a little glass of wine, right? He's traveling. He's got a 15 or so minute delay when he lands. He can't pull up to the tarmac. And then he wants to tell you, traveling's not that bad. Traveling's not terrible. People are always complaining about traveling. I've never really had much of an issue. You're right, private jet guy,
with
your warm meal.
Who is Larry the Cable Guy? Is that your bit? Is that what you're talking about?
I was actually picturing Bill Maher.
Oh, were you? Okay.
But it could have been anybody. But, like, these people that are telling me travel's not bad. You're not traveling with me.
Yeah.
You're not sitting there next to Danny Hoohey when we got a four-hour delay at 11 p.m. coming back from West Palm Beach.
Yeah, where I drove 7.5 hours from New York to do 15-minute set at Muskingum College, bro. You know what I mean? Like, that's travel.
I just want you to think real hard.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to stick with Eagles fans get a bad rap based on your one-game experience wearing green in the club level, around some of the richest people in Philadelphia. Are we sure that all those people with the black eyes and the blood and those jail cells that fill up below the stadium and all those stories on Sundays at the Vet, that was all just bad luck, right?
Okay. We can do a small sampling, Darius, that, just for edification, just to show you that it's not always about Philly fans. I came up with a small list of things that fans have done. Okay?
Okay.
All right. So, trivia question. This fan base had someone arrested for punching a horse.
Hmm. Was that... That wasn't Philly, was it?
That was Philly.
Okay.
This fan base were given bracelets to, I believe it was a...
Hockey.
Yeah, it was a hockey thing, right?
I think it was like a dead member of the owner's family.
Yeah, it was like
away,
one of those like remembrance type things, and it was a very beautiful deal where everybody was given a remembrance bracelet, and they then threw them onto the ice, and a lot of guys were arrested because the home team wasn't playing that well. You know what fan base that was?
That couldn't have been Philly.
Philadelphia.
Not the Philly that you know, apparently. Right? Not that Philly.
Fan was arrested only 10 plus years ago, a little over 10 years ago, for intentionally vomiting on a little girl.
Oh. Oh.
Philadelphia again.
Personally vomited.
No, like, not a Philly fan.
Like, yeah, decided, Philly. I don't like this little girl. I'm going to pull triggers, and I'm going to throw up on her.
That just doesn't sound like Philly.
Yeah. Thanks, Coach. This is a bit of a curveball here. This fan base didn't like J.D. Drew, so fans, not one fan, several fans, took batteries and threw them at J.D. Drew while he was trying to play a baseball game.
That definitely wasn't Philly.
Phillies again. In addition to booing Santa, this fan base threw hokies at Santa Claus. That's the underrated part of the story. No one remembers that part. The booing everyone talks about. They don't talk about throwing the hokies.
The snowballs is what everyone talks about.
Well, the snowballs everyone knows, but nobody talks about the hokies that were thrown. That's Philly one more time.
Daris, here's what we should do as a show. I don't know what you think about this, but I think this would be a good idea.
Oh, all right.
Daris has to go to the rest of the Eagles home
game. Oh, God.
Wearing the opposing team's jersey. He has to walk to and from the stadium in the opposing team's jersey, chanting, I want you to chant for your team. It's like when they're playing the Broncos, like, who's ready for Denver, Bo Nix? You got to walk into the stadium, and I want you to sit in the 400s. I want you to sit in the nosebleeds with the unwashed masses.
And when that team, your team that you're rooting for that day, gets a first down, you tell everyone that it's a first down.
Yeah, you got to let them know.
You got to show them.
Because it's okay. They're just so friendly. They're just going to tell you, good job, Daris. Way to go, Broncos.
What's more dangerous, me doing that or me walking around at 1:30 in the morning to go to 7-Eleven?
That's actually a great question. I don't have an answer. I would say actively antagonizing.
Yeah, yeah,
is more dangerous,
right. Yeah.
More perilous.
I'm still. It's Philadelphia. I watched the first 48. I'm going to go with walking around 1 a.m. downtown Philadelphia. I don't. You should have been on a TV show. I don't know what happened. I don't know how or why you dodged what you did, but I'm glad you did.
I live to tell another day.
We should be reading about you in a newspaper right now, this moment.
But I'm here.
You are.
I'm here.
So just think about what you, just it's all I'm asking.
I'll reconsider my statement.
Right.
I'll say that. I'll go home, do some homework, and I'll reconsider my statement.
Daris was laying in his king-size bed on his private jet.
On his peach.
He was just eating caviar going, this travel thing's fun. Man, I could get used to this.
I love camping, he said, from the Ritz-Carlton.
Shout out to our guys, Kondori and Murad, for the great seats. Man, was it fun at the 50-yard line in that club level. It's beautiful. All right, with that out of the way, let's get to some of the overreactions of the day. So, Danny, I'm looking for this is something that's in the back of your mind, that little voice, after two losses, Steelers, Eagles games, the way they played out.
Yep.
And you're going, go away, go away, go away. You don't want to hear it. You don't want to listen to it. But you got something chirping back there. What is your overreaction that you don't want to give credence to?
The offense has been figured out. And it's not a quiet voice either. It's not one of those little whispers in the recesses of my mind. It's winning the argument right now. And I'm trying to tell him to pipe down, but he's making good points. We've got that history. We've got the data that says Jaden Daniels isn't being allowed to run. Not because he can't, but there's something happening that's governing it. The blueprint, the playbook, whatever you want to call it. There are adjustments that need making to improve some of the things that we're seeing that are not being made. Now, this is two games against two very good defenses in the span of 5 days. Maybe this 10-day mini-bye will provide some opportunity for Cliff Kingsbury and company to get back in the lab and figure something out. But I am really, really worried that because there's not a bunch of counterpunches with some great playmakers that you can't stop no matter what the scheme, I'm worried this offense has been figured out.
So we're kind of in lockstep. I'm going to say this a little differently, I guess, but mine is that the Kingsbury regression is coming. And I don't want this to be true, and I'm not caving to the little voice in my head just yet, but I got these numbers for you.
Oh, no.
Cliff Kingsbury in games 1-7 as the head coach in Arizona, 45-24-1. That offense would hum, and they were 45-24-1 before week 8. Cliff Kingsbury, after week 8 as a head coach, 23-71.
23-71.
45-24-1 weeks 1-7. Week 8 on, 23-71.
Mm.
Now, that is a head coach record stat.
Sure.
It's not an offensive stat. But I'll dive in on the offensive numbers, and we can go over those Monday. They're not a whole lot better. That is the voice in the back of my head going, you were waiting on the other shoe to drop. You were a little worried this is going to happen. What
and
if
here's
it's
that shoe in slow-mo going,
but here's the saving grace. They play the Cowboys next. who are so bad.
Aren't they?
God, they suck. And after that, they play the Titans. They should be able to move the ball, score points on both of those teams. Even if things are not as good and teams are catching up to them, that should still be a couple of wins. You should still be able to get to 9-4 and be positioned pretty well.
Yeah, you could hand, I keep picking on the Carolina Panthers, and why not everybody else is, but if you hand the Carolina Panthers the same blueprint that Pittsburgh used to slow down Daniels in the run game, adorable. What are they going to do with it? Like, if you handed me, like, the way to do nuclear fusion, I probably can't help you. You tell me how to fix a sink or, you know, solve plumbing issues, I can't help you. You need a professional. Most of the teams they're going to play aren't good enough to do anything about it. You could have all the best blueprints, and that's precious. Our guy's better than your guy. But for two straight games here over 5 days, not only have there been good blueprints and really good plans, credit to their opponents, but they've had the horses to be able to do it. That, to me, is the essential ingredient here. And there are only a couple of those teams that, you know, they might yet see, and that's postseason-type stuff. I think they're in great shape leading up into the next time they play Philadelphia in a little over a month from now.
Let's hit the phones. Tim is in Cleveland, listening on the Odyssey app.
Tim, man.
Garris loves the fans in Cleveland, I've heard.
Big Cleveland guy.
Tim, what's good? How are you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. I love the show.
Thank you.
I basically have to agree with Grant. There were some things I saw from the offense yesterday that just were extremely frustrating. Just a lack of imagination. It just seemed like the formations were, constantly the same. And then that fourth down play, you have Jaden in the shotgun pretty much all the time, and then you put him under center. And if I'm not mistaken, he even had him run to the short side of the field. It frustrates me. It just seems like it's been stagnant the last couple of weeks. And, no involvement from the wide receivers whatsoever. He didn't even take any shots whatsoever down the field.
No. I can't wait to dive deeper into that.
Thank you, brother.
The call. At some point, like, it's obviously not part of the plan when you're just not doing it much at all. But at some point, it's up to Daniels to do it eventually.
Yeah.
You got to take a shot. You got to soften something up. You got to give your guys a chance. And he just never did.
From our vantage point, I think it's two things. One, I don't think there were a ton of plays called with shots in them, right?
They might not have thought they could hold up in pro.
I think that's part of it, right? This is all a balance. I think play calling, for the most part, last night for both teams was conservative. Then when Philly stepped out of their conservative, during that double reverse, we're going to flip it back, flea flicker, Frankie Louvu said, thank you so much for doing that. Why don't you meet the ground, Jalen Hurts? So mostly people kept it pretty tight to the vest. There were a couple plays, though, that featured a deep route where, as we're watching, I'm hitting, Kia Kondori sitting next to me going, McLaurin was one-on-one. He's going deep. And whether that was there or not, it was turned down for whatever reason. Maybe the play was Daniels was rolling a different direction, or that wasn't the read. But there were opportunities there to do exactly what you just said, give my guy a shot. And we didn't see those.
The question is, what overreaction in your mind after yesterday, like a thought you're worried about, are you not ready to give credence to, but you're talking yourself out of today? You're a little nervous that maybe you're onto something. 800-636-1067 is the number. We'll get to those next on Grant and Danny from Third Hill Brewing in Silver Spring on Georgia Avenue. It's a Field Trip Friday on the Fan.
What happened on the hand injury? How did you feel?
I'm straight. Just got a little cut.
Was there something that happened? Stepped on or?
Couldn't even tell you. Sometimes it's football.
A few words there. Jaden Daniels didn't have a lot to offer on the cut he sustained. Sounded like, according to the sideline report, he got a cut glued back so that there was no blood, no issues. I don't know if that replaced stitches or if it would have been bad enough to get stitches anyway, but the blood went away. He continued to play. It was a struggle for him, And as he said, that's football to some extent. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on the Fan. The Commanders offense held in check by the Eagles. They got a late touchdown, two-point conversion, but it was a 10-point night offensively for Washington. Their lone scoring drive in the first quarter, four plays and 58 yards when they took over the ball at the 42-yard line near midfield. Otherwise, they couldn't move the football. And that's part of the theme here. A lot of us have some concerns back of our head right now about what's going on. What is that quiet thing you don't want to say out loud that you're a little nervous about? You're not completely buying in on your overreaction on this Friday.
The offense has been figured out. I am so worried about this. Because, again, we're not going to notice it against bad teams. They're going to be able to do what they want. I think they can just impose their will because they have done that. I don't think you can give some of the teams on their schedule remaining this blueprint, and it's not going to help them. You know, I don't think it's going to help the Saints, who are a tire fire. It might help the Titans, whose defense is pretty good.
If you give me the directions and a calculator on how to build a bridge, I'm probably not going to make you a bridge.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like, it's like, hey, build a rocket. Why don't you build it? I'll see if it's good or not. Like, I can't. Like, I can't help you. But I think that's what the deal is. But good defenses, the kind they're going to play in January, the kind that they played last night and on Sunday, the kind that they're going to play again when they play Philadelphia on December 22nd, can do something about it. You've seen the limiting of Jaden Daniels' running. You've seen receivers not running free to the same degree. You've seen teams kind of willing to give a couple things up, knowing that Washington wants to get to it, and they haven't been able to. My fear is there's not much adjustment here, and I'm hoping that this 10-day period for Kingsbury is the same sort of adjustment he made in that soul-searching trip to South Asia that he did when he wasn't employed by anybody in football for a year plus. Like, you need to do something different, and that means Terry McLaurin can't just line up on the left side against the same guy and not get a target for the entire game. Wrong. Do something else. You need some adjustments here, and I'm hoping they come in short order.
Yeah, for me, it's Kingsbury specific, like, to the scheme of the offense, and you look back to Arizona, and it was almost an annual tradition that there was a line of delineation between the first half and second half of seasons, and it feels like maybe that regression that we talked a lot about on the show early, haven't talked as much about lately, maybe that is happening, that some things are being solved, and he needs to get back to the well on moving guys around and motioning and making things looking a little different, dressing them up differently. He's got a mini bye here, 10 days to do that. Let's go to Ryan in Arlington on Grant and Danny. Ryan, what's up? Thanks for the call.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. So here's what I've been chewing on all day, kind of more of a long-term problem that I hope isn't the case. So we were way ahead of schedule, as we know, this year, and we trade for Marshawn Lattimore, right? Because, you know, we're trying to compete this year now, which is something we never expected. But Adam Peters' philosophy is build through the draft, supplement through free agency. So now in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, man, maybe we weren't good enough this year. Why did we jump the gun? We gave up a 3 and a 4. We got Lattimore and a 5 back. I just really hope that, you know, in the offseason or in the future, I'm not looking back and saying, darn, I wish Peters had that 3 and that 4 and built for the future rather than really trying to sell some assets for 2024.
So I appreciate that. I mean, that's the concern in the back of your head. I can't tell you what to think. Here's what I will say, though. You have not seen Lattimore play yet, so you're obviously down on the move because it's been 2 weeks. He's got a hurt hamstring.
Yeah.
He hasn't helped them. And, to your point, it was a 3rd and a 5th. But they give him a 3rd-round pick, which is not nothing. If Lattimore was a rental for this season, I would agree with you. They're 0-2 since they brought him in. The hamstring's clearly a problem. Maybe they're not good enough to actually win something meaningful this year. You rented him for a season. That was a mistake. But that's not what this is. Lattimore is under contract for the 2 years after this one. You've got this stretch run with him, and then next year, and then the year after, to be your number one corner. He was still playing at a number one level when he was healthy. So they would be in the market. Look at how bad the corner room is, and I don't mean that they can't play as much as just when you line it up, there's no number one. There might not be a number two, although Sanders still was ridiculously good last night.
He was awesome last night, man.
He looked, maybe that's your number two, and maybe, you know, St. Juste is moved around or something. But they need a corner one. Either by way of the draft in the first or second round, if they can find someone, or in free agency, that costs $20-plus million. Lattimore's an $18 million a year number one corner who's got pelts on the wall. So he basically, to me, was a two-year, $36 million free agent addition mm-hmm. for the next 2 years, and you just got the benefit of thrown in with the deal. Hey, I'll put this in the cart, too. That was the rest of this season.
That's right.
So this, to me, is like a house money rest of the year.
So I understand the point, and I think you countered it very well in the sense that we haven't seen him yet. So it, like you get to me, you get him the bonus for this year for games like this against good teams. You didn't need him against Carolina, right? Of course not. But this is when you need him for games like this when you're playing really good teams with multiple offensive options.
Let's go to Bill, who's in Pennsylvania. Darius loves it there. Hey, Bill, how are you? Grant and Danny on
good.
The
phone. Good. How are you guys doing again? Nice to talk to you. I wish I could have came out and saw you yesterday, and glad you got home safely.
Thank you, buddy.
So my overreaction is, and you guys were talking about it, I mean, I think our defense with Lattimore coming, you know, in a few games, hopefully going to help us. You talked about the Kingsbury, the slide, and I'm going to go his play calling and just some of the offensive scheme. On a macro level, we understand a few games will get by. On a micro level, I mean, we do have Philadelphia coming up on the 22nd. Game could be flexed. We didn't throw the ball anywhere last year. We didn't test their corners. We'd have no film to see what would work and what couldn't work. So we're going to go into the 22nd with maybe arguably the same game plan as we have. John Bates as an adjustment is not sustainable. I think that Cliff really needs to redraw, open up the playbook, which I thought I heard one of the beat reporters say that you know, we would see that or hear that in the coming weeks. I was a little disappointed in last night's game. And then, guys, you may be coming back because right now Philadelphia and Washington line up in wild card weekend. The sixth seed, the seventh seed, and the second seed. So we may see you back.
Yeah, about that?
You know, in Philadelphia.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah.
No, appreciate the phone call, man. Yeah, so
I'll take the first three quarters again.
Yeah. But I think the point about – you know, I think you made this an astute point earlier, is that short week situation coming off a really tough game against Pittsburgh that was super physical and challenging, you may not have the most elaborate things at your disposal. I mean, these are pros. These guys, you know, have stuff installed over the course of weeks and months, and you can have recall and
call
upon
it. Yeah, I'll say this really quick because I remember when I covered Shanahan, he would have members of the staff working ahead. So, like, the team, there was no element of thinking about the Eagles before the Steelers.
Yeah, you got to make it as easy as you can.
But
on the
he would assign
right?
like six staffers to build everything. Hey, build our red zone, build our 4-minute, 2-minute, build our goal line, and they would put together just like it was a normal game and you were on a bye week. They would build everything for that game so it was normally prepared and prepped. And then the difference was the shortness of, you know, the time on the field, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And that does affect the team. But you're, I guess, even if you find things on film, you can add to your game plan. You're probably not, like, running a trick play that you need to work on or something like that.
Yeah, but it also, the way it looked to me watching the game last night was we don't feel real comfortable doing a lot of deep stuff, taking shots down the football field. A, their secondary really good. You saw them last night. They played really well, including Quinyon Mitchell, who's a badass. But beyond that, you know, whether it's blocking it up or just by design, I don't think we're going to do a lot of things that are higher risk. We're going to try to make this muck it up a little bit. They're not doing an AFC North rock fight, but closer to that than the, dude, watch this. Look out, I'm going to go Ben Johnson on this thing. Full deep in my bag, have a lineman throw it to a different lineman. We probably weren't there last night. It was more on the side of, you know, sort of Gibbs 2.0 level of conservatism when it comes to, you know, that play calling last night. It looked to me like they didn't really feel comfortable doing a lot of deeper stuff.
Barkley, by the way, was fantastic last night. We haven't really talked much about the Eagles, but early in the year I was not a believer in Philly. I just didn't. First of all, Hurts was not good last year and got off to a slow start again this year. Frankly, I didn't think Hurts was that good last night at all.
Especially not at the start. They had him disrupted.
Yeah, I thought he kind of stunk early. He got okay as the game went on. But Barkley is a game changer for them. He is a machine, that guy. And the fact that the Giants didn't pay him, even in an era where you don't pay backs, it's kind of head-shaking. But he was the missing ingredient for the Eagles. I mean, he's ahead of Adrian Peterson's 2,000-yard pace at this point.
Yes.
He's number one in the league going into the Sunday of week 11 here, rushing yards, scrimmage yards. And even in games like that where you hold him down, they did a pretty good job. He was running effectively, but he wasn't ripping any big plays off. Eventually, he's just inevitable, right? He makes Percy Butler miss on that catch. He goes for 40 yards, had 50 as a receiver. All purpose yesterday, almost a 200-yard game.
Yeah, shout out to our guy, Ryan Spader, who I saw this stat that he posted. He has more 140 yards, multiple rushing touchdown games than any player in Eagles history. Not in the season, in their history of the organization through half of a year for them. Like, he's been pretty impactful. He was a
great
fit. Yeah.
And they didn't really ever get their passing game going. Devontae Smith had 4 for 29.
Mm-hmm.
21 of those came on one catch, by the way.
They had a drop early in the game, too, on the sideline, remember?
He had a bad drop that he basically put in, I think it was Percy Butler's hands as he ran out of bounds. But A.J. Brown was lining up constantly against someone that I thought he could beat, and they just never really threw him the ball. But Sanders still, when they did throw him the ball a couple times, was right there, and I give him all the credit. He might have been the best player on the field for Washington defensively on a night where Luvu was really good, Chin was really good. You know, that's a big compliment.
Yeah, and that one play he broke up in the end zone to Devontae Smith, a lot of people
that was awesome
have
too.
Fallen for that little stutter go that looked like, oh, they're going to throw it short. And he didn't bite. He stayed right with him, got a hand on it. I mean, you're going, okay, that's grown-up stuff.
That was like the old Tommy Mansky baseball videos.
That's right.
I mean, that was teach tape, like how do you defend down the field on that look. Let's go to Paul in D.C. on Grant and Danny. Paul, what are you worried about after yesterday?
I think Grant hit it on the head. I mean, Danny hit it on the head when he's talking about Cliff Kingsbury. I'm not sold on him. I got remnants of Arizona back in the day. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, you know, so I'm not sold on. First of all, you don't have a situation where you got a number one receiver that don't even get a target into the fourth quarter. That's number one. Number two, you got
Can't
a situation
happen.
Where you got two good running backs. And Eckler and Robinson, and you don't stay consistent with the run. People are always looking at the rushes, you know, how many attempts they had, but you got to look at when they get those attempts. You ran twice on a third and one and a fourth round right in the teeth of the defense of Dalen Cobb and Dave. You don't do that. You know, where's the halfback toss to Eckler? Where are some of the screen passes that you were doing earlier in the year? So I'm kind of with him. They figured him out. He needs to make some adjustments at halftime. He doesn't do that. And like you said, there's no creativity in terms of, you know, how they do, you know, motions and things of that nature, kind of like what Kyle Shanahan and those guys do. But, you know, give them some time. But, man, you got to use your running back. What was the purpose of getting B-Rob back if you wasn't going to rush him? He should have 22 carries by himself. And for all those people who think that rushes don't matter, look at the top four teams in the league. Detroit, Kansas City, Philly. All three of those teams run the ball. So there you
appreciate
go.
You, dude. Yeah, they're effective offenses, and
Washington's
that's one way to
run
do
it. About as well as everybody, too.
But to your Eckler point.
And the Ravens, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Appreciate the call, right, man, as always. Thank you. How deep into the game was it when you turned and looked at me and goes, does he have a completion to anybody other than Eckler? I mean, it was the second quarter, right?
Yeah, it was the end of the half. His first three completions, and it was like several drives in, were to Eckler, and it was four of his five targets were to Eckler.
Yeah, because that's all that Philly was willing to give up, right? To me, that's what it looked like.
But he just wasn't seeing it. Because, like, today when you go back, there was, like, a third and five early, maybe the first or second drive. Well, first of all, his second throw of the night, on that third down in the middle of the field to Noah Brown, where it was, like, the diving tip by Bond that was nearly intercepted.
Yeah.
Like, that, he has not made that throw all season.
That's right.
Like, balls don't touch defenders' hands, and he's not forcing balls into non-existent windows. So that was my first, like, okay, that was not normal. But then a drive later, I think it was the next drive, there's a third and four or so, and he has Zach Ertz. And Ertz has run this route in this situation and moved the chains 15 times this year, where he just runs that little kind of like a stop or like a curl right at the sticks.
Mm-hmm.
And if Daniels is seeing it clean and feeling okay about himself, gets the ball, fires it in there 80 miles an hour, and you're moving the chains, and we're on to the next. And he just kind of looked at him, patted the ball, and then it was too late. Now he's moving. Now he gets sacked, I think, later in the sequence. And he got sacked on back-to-back plays.
Yep.
But, like, those situations all year long have been different results. So I think it's true that, yeah, they were taking things away, but I also think he just wasn't comfortable. He wasn't really seeing it.
Well, that's for sure that it wasn't
as
comfortable.
Clean.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a chicken or the egg thing. The cold water for some of these fears people have that they're telling us about, they're 7-4.
Yes.
They have not really lost a game that they shouldn't. They're still beating up on the bad teams. They'll get a chance to play a lot of bad teams moving forward. And it looks like, barring some type of major collapse, they're playoff bound, which far exceeds the expectations. And maybe we just need to recalibrate how good we think they actually are when you're talking about playing with the heavyweights in year one of Dan Quinn and Jaden Daniels. 800-636-1067. Next, I want to bring something up we have not talked about all day. I'm sure somebody in town has. We were on the train, but I've not heard anybody mention this. I think this is it's a little Calhurdian. I'm going to tell you that in advance. But I think it could be a thing. Could be a thing. I'm going to do this next on G&D.
We knew that adversity comes, like it just does. That's our game. That's why we love it so much. There's hard parts, and tonight's hard. And in fact, I even said that, you know, the last, you know, two games, these are tough, and they test your resolve. They build some of your resilience. It's a difficult, you know, 4 or 5 game stretch, whatever it is. And it also emphasizes the ability to go close it and be there at the end and go win it. And those are the lessons for us to say, to be the team, you know, we can be. Those have to go down on our terms, and we've been pretty good in that spot. And so over the last 2 weeks, not to finish, and that's not one side of the ball. You know, that's collectively, you know, finding that blood in the water and say, we're going to go end this thing. And we'll get there. But over the last 2 weeks, you know, we weren't able to demonstrate that and express that, you know, to the fullest level.
That was Dan Quinn yesterday. Welcome back to Grant and Danny on the Fan, taking you up to 6:30 from Third Hill Brewing Company in Silver Spring, on G&D, our Friday field trip, stop number 2 in a row in Maryland. We're back in Virginia next week. We'll give you the details before we say goodbye at 6:30. But Falls Church, we are coming your way. And that'll be ramping up for a Cowboys game. That should be a good time.
That'll be a hoot and a holler. I like that. Because Dallas stinks, and that's what's most important here.
Yeah, it should be a fun week of making fun of the Cowboys coming up on Grant and Danny. All right, so here's my Calhurtian thought that I think needs to get a little attention. I'm going to do my damnedest today to look this up best I can for Monday. I have a hard time believing Jaden Daniels has ever played a game in colder weather than last night. Jaden Daniels is from California. Jaden Daniels went to Arizona State. Jaden Daniels left Arizona State and went to LSU. Now, it gets chilly, I'm sure, at different points of the winter. Baton Rouge, some of the places in the South where he played in the SEC. But do we think he's ever played in a game colder than the 47 degrees or whatever it was last night? I bring this up because it wasn't that long ago that I was watching Lamar Jackson play a game in the cold. And he's like sitting on the bench. And it was literally, it was Baltimore. It was 58 degrees or something. Maybe it was like 54 degrees. And he had not only a beanie on with a coat and gloves and everything, but he literally was wearing one of those like protective gear, like turtle things that only show your eyes over your face. As if the guy's about to go skiing in January in Colorado. And I'm like, what is he wearing? And a bunch of people get in my mentions and they're like, he's from Florida, man. Leave him alone. I'm like, the weather is still not that cold, whether you're from Florida or not. Are we sure Jaden Daniels has ever played in that cold of an environment?
I'm not. I haven't looked it up. I was trying to figure out a way to do that.
Weekend homework is going to be to go through every box score of his college career and just see the game time
and you could
temperature.
Find it? Yeah, I mean, they play in the Pac-12, so it's a lot of Palo Alto, a lot of like Southern California. It's also Oregon. It's also Washington. Those are northern-type places. Washington State and Pullman might get a little chilly. I have no idea. But it is something to think about where you're not used to it. Right? I mean, that stuff has been out there since I was a kid. I remember my dad and like all the, you know, the other old guys in the neighborhood talking about football. And these dome teams or these warm-weather teams, they don't want to come north and east in the wintertime. Right? There's always this built-in disadvantage. So it's hard to say what he's used to or not. So now, could it be that's not a factor at all? Or could it be a huge factor because he's not as comfortable because he hasn't done it? I don't know. But I am curious about it, in all sincerity.
I found Arizona State, Washington. It was basically on the same date in November a couple of years ago. Now it's been probably 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Daniels 10 for 16 for 90 yards in a game. Now, that was a different Jaden Daniels.
That's a different Jaden Daniels.
That's very, very young.
That's a Herm Edwards Jaden Daniels there?
But I got to find a way to go get, like, the attendance and the weather and all of those things.
Time and temperature brought to you by
57,858 at Husky Stadium in Seattle, Washington. 7 p.m. kick. Night game in November. I still can't find the temperature. This might be harder than I thought.
This is my point, yeah.
Well, when you look up baseball box scores, right?
Yeah.
It gives you the same data for every game. First pitch time, time of game, you know, all that stuff. And you always get the weather. I assume if I find a box score, I'll be able to do that. But that's going to be my homework. But is there anything to that possibly?
Of course.
Where Jaden Daniels playing in the cold weather, was just a little bit bothered by something he hasn't been used to. And you got to get used to that, and you're going to get more reps and opportunities to do that as you go.
Yeah, it's going to happen, right? I mean, a million guys have done that and gotten over it, right? I mean, I remember, you know, Brett Favre, a Mississippi guy. All of a sudden, this was a major adjustment. He'd never done this before in the freezing cold of Green Bay, and then it became like a source of pride, and that was their deal. And I remember, you know, Michael Vick, someone that was probably not growing up in you know, shoveling snow here, there, and everywhere in Atlanta, went on the road in like one of the coldest games ever and beat the aforementioned Brett Favre and company in Green Bay. So some people, you never know how they're going to react. For others, it's like it takes getting used to. It's an adjustment. But I'd be curious to actually to find that out if that was a factor at all. Of course, he'll never tell you it was. Like if you say, hey, Jaden, is it a factor? He'll go, absolutely not.
According to him.
But I wonder.
His hand bleeding wasn't a factor. Right. His rib isn't a factor.
My hand just began to bleed. At football. Because he says the right things and I love him so much.
Yeah, he says all the right things and that's very, very cool. But if we're – there's such a thing as – people will talk about this team's record in a certain temperature, this quarterback – when it's under 40 degrees, that's a thing for a reason. And I'm not saying it's the end-all, be-all, but it's Calhurdian. I don't love it.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're doing the things that are in the back of your head you don't want to give credence to, one of them is, are we sure Jaden Daniels wasn't bothered by the cold? And that might have been the coldest game he's ever played in. And I'm going to dig on that to get the information to make sure it's not just a wacky take that has no bearing.
I'm picturing Grant, by the way, just Saturday afternoon, just calling SIDs. From various colleges on the West Coast.
Hey, your 2023 game against Utah. What was the temperature at the kickoff?
I don't even work there anymore, man. That was like 10 years ago.
All right, next. We got to go around the NFL. We got a huge weekend ahead, and we get to enjoy it all. It's a Red Zone Sunday, people.
Yeah, it's a Red Zone Sunday.
It's a Red Zone Sunday.
It's a Red Zone Sunday.
Sunday.
Yeah.
We get to enjoy football.
It's nice.
The old-fashioned way. The way Dad did it, right? No Washington ruining everything. Mm-mm. We're just going to be watching football.
Can't hurt me no more.
Although this year they've been great to watch.
Yeah,
they've actually been supplementing.
But they caused me pain last night. They can't do anymore. They cannot hurt me anymore this weekend.
So we'll go around the NFL, storylines from every game. Don't forget about as well. And we got a Caps power play. They play at the Avs tonight in Colorado. You're listening to Grant and Danny on the Fan.